what's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 31 of Zipline, the official Zipper Interactive podcast. I'm Chris Roper.
I'm Jeremy Dunham, and 31's quite funny because that's also how many inches around my arms are. Today, we're joined by designers Blaine Higdon and Christian Sadak.
Welcome.
Howdy.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. We're here to talk about some very interesting things with you guys, but before we get to that, let's do the Z-Cap.
Z-Cap time. So obviously, for Mag fans, it's a good week in that we've released a new patch, our first patch in a couple of months. It was version 2.11, and we've added quite a few things to it. We've had, one of the most useful things that we've done is we've made acquisition and domination modes completely faction neutral now. Mm-hmm. We had a really good response to that when we set that mode up during our promotion for the 1 year anniversary. And you know, based on that, we're like, why not? The game's over a year old. Yeah. People seem to enjoy it. Our numbers went up when people played the game. Let's make it permanent, and so we have.
And we had a lot of unsolicited requests to keep it that way.
Yes, so that's what we've done. And in addition to making some adjustments to the CP to XP ratio and formula, so what that basically means is the lower level you are, the more CP you'll earn per XP that you've earned that you can then spend on weapons. It's a little bit more forgiving for the newer guys.
Now, to touch on that real fast, though, is if you're up to, you know, in the 60s and up to level 70, you're still getting the same amount that you were before, mm-hmm. just there's now an extra bonus for the earlier level guys.
Exactly, and we've made some stability fixes.
Last night on Game Trailers TV, we had a bunch of new SOCOM information come out of there. One of them is the premiere of Covert Missions, where you can play as 45 in four different missions of the game, and you basically go in, they're all night missions, and you have things to do to kind of set up the following mission where OpsCom and the whole crew come in. We'll talk about more of that in a second. And we also announced the full deployment edition of SOCOM 4, which basically comes with the Sharpshooter, PlayStation Eye, PlayStation Move, and a navigation controller, plus SOCOM 4, of course. And so you basically get the whole package of everything you need to get up and running with the Sharpshooter. And that runs for $150, but it's, what, $220 worth of value?
Yeah, if you buy everything separately, it'd be $220 value. So that's about a 30% savings. It's pretty good.
Plus a nice big box.
Yeah, it's huge. We've got a couple of them in your office. Because we use those for the unboxing segment that they use on Game Trailers TV. And it's a pretty sweet box, and they're huge. What I really like best about them, though, is that you can display them horizontally or vertically. Which, you know, I think that's a
great
cool
for retailers.
Yeah, I know. Another big bit of information, as these two can attest to, is that this week we had an event based on the co-op, which is another thing that we unveiled. And it's five players, online only. But you can have six maps, and there's a lot of very specific things that you can do to make them interesting. There, you know, a few random elements, and that's exactly why these guys are here. So,
well, before we get to that, real quick pitch is a lot of people are asking us now that Killzone 3 is out, when the SOCOM 4 beta is going live. And just to kind of put a stop to those questions, is next week we're going to talk about all that kind of stuff.
So yeah, the beta dates will be revealed next week. In fact, I just got done proofreading Chris's blog post about it.
Yes, you'll see those. I know when it's starting.
That's right. Well, thanks for making everybody feel better about that.
Yeah, but everybody will learn about that next week. Yes, Jeremy, back to what you were saying.
Sure thing. And one other thing is I would like to apologize if I sound like I'm, you know, the bartender in No Holds Barred. But I was... I was very sick. Yeah. The whole Coken movie. something about Mary the bartender there. You know, what are you looking at, Choppers? Yeah. Anyway, I was sick, so I apologize if you can barely hear me. Anyway, Blaine and Christian, you guys have worked closely for the duration of this project, specifically on the single player and the co-op missions. Tell us about co-op in general. Blaine, you were at the event. You attended. You saw the turnout, which is pretty good. Lots of really good reactions. Tell us about co-op mode. How does it work? What do you do?
Yeah, so we just unveiled co-op in San Francisco. It was pretty awesome. We had various media outlets playing through the game in three teams of five. It's a five-player co-op. So the cooperative modes, out of the box, we have six maps, two game types on each. But there is a lot of randomization in the game, so even if you play the same map multiple times, you're going to have a different experience because we move the objectives around or we move the AI around or randomly decide different AI tactics against you.
And so, you can change the density and difficulty and things like that, so you can kind of go through once. Like I think it's kind of fun to put it on easy but high density and just go in and mow guys down.
Right.
But then when you want the challenge, you put them on even maybe middle density, but then crank the difficulty all the way up and kind of play to the strengths of your team. And I like to play just above the skill level of everybody there, so it's a really hard challenge, and maybe you won't make it all the way through.
Because he's just that good.
Because I'm just like that. He's slightly better.
You got to go with the elite on high
density.
Yeah.
How a bunch
when
of
we were capturing
that.
Footage for the B-roll, that was the mode that it was set to.
Yeah.
Was the highest possible setting, and it was very intense.
Yes.
It looked awesome on the footage, too. So I think that that is definitely the recommended way to play. Test yourselves. Test your buddies. See what you've got. Well, can you tell us a little bit about the two modes? You mentioned that there are two different ways or two different modes.
Yeah, and actually, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the enemy density, or as we've been calling it in the game, the enemy count. Where for each mission you create, you can choose to set it to either a low, medium, or high enemy count, depending on the challenge you're looking to face. But yeah, the two modes. Espionage is a mode where you go around gathering intel, and those can be depending on the map in non-linear spots or linear across the path of the map. And after you've done that, you'll have enough intel to sabotage some key infrastructure of the enemies, whether it be disabling some sort of radar station or hacking into a database and acquiring data. All the while, there'll be, of course, waves of enemies coming at you trying to stop you from hacking into their database. And then in takedown, there is a assigned enemy officer or multiple officers that you have to locate and then neutralize.
In terms of the game itself, how does it differ from the solo campaign?
Going in with co-op dedicated levels, we definitely were able to cater the gameplay more toward co-op, whereas in the single player, it's a bit more of a cinematic experience, and the gameplay is more catered to you giving orders and squad tactics with your AI buddies. And co-op, with some of the differences are there's no checkpoints, but when you are incapacitated, you have an infinite amount of time in which your buddies can heal you. The goal being that, without any respawns or anything, you have one set of players, you have to make it through helping each other out. It really helps build that squad cohesion.
I think also, too, you get, from what I've seen, just doing our internal playtest on co-op, is definitely a sense of, even in the armory, everybody's talking about who's going to be the sniper, who's going to be the machine gunner, who's bringing a shotgun with them, what sort of grenades everybody's bringing. You definitely get that more camaraderie, that more teamwork even beforehand. And then just even the layouts of the levels and the encounters and where the objectives are. There's always positions where, like, snipers, you always see the sniper heading off to the hilltop and scoping in and, like, calling out even enemy targets for everybody else. And the machine gunner a place to deploy cover. So it's actually good that everybody can kind of play to their play styles, and we don't really force anybody into a particular play style on that. Snipers can be snipers, machine gunners can be machine gunners.
Yeah, and that's even true with the QA guys who are playing the game 8-10 hours a day or whatever it is for X number of months on end. When we were capturing the footage for this, I'm playing with these guys who had gone through these missions 100,000 times, and they're still every time they go into the next thing saying, okay, you go set up over here, you go set up over there, because if you just rush in there, even if you kind of know what is going to happen ahead of you, you're still going to get gunned down. And there's still variables that happen even after you've played them a million times, and you've kind of always got to be prepared and go in with a game plan to each one of these encounters. I think that's kind of the really cool thing, is even after you've done this so many times, you still don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah, that randomness that Blaine was talking about with the AI themselves is, guy can be around the corner one time and not there the next time, but also like the AI tactics that they use and that they're constantly evolving, constantly changing based off of what the player is actually doing, just gets that replayability up there. I mean, we've been on the design side, we've been playing it now for a good chunk, having play tests now every day, a couple of us, and it's, we know these maps in and out, and it still surprises us what the AI are doing. We still got to be careful, still got to use teamwork. So
one thing that's also kind of cool, I think, about the co-op is that, of course, when you're playing with four other people or up to four other people, that, teamwork is obviously going to be encouraged, and you're going to want to talk to these guys. But there is still the, you press up on the D-pad to call out enemies for the rest of your squad, and it'll show up there. So there still is a little bit of play of that carryover from single player.
Yeah, that's actually, and it's a tactic that once players get used to and start using, you'll see how powerful it is. We get CJ Hine, who's been on the podcast before. Every time I play with him, he's always the sniper. And he, even if he can't get a target, he's actually will call out the target for us. So at least we know that, oh, wait, watch for this guy flanking around. So, yeah, it's just good, even the setup, and everybody kind of takes a target and marks it, and they all come up with different colors for your corresponding player. So really makes it easier. It's just like, okay, who's taking who, and you see all these little diamonds show up with all the different colors.
And well, it's especially helpful, too, for snipers or sometimes we'll play and there'll be guys with rocket launchers who are like kind of behind things and you can't really see where they're coming from. And by the time that you know you're there, you're already dead. And then everybody else is kind of running around, where is he, where is he? And then somebody targets him and then you can see everybody flank around and go take him out. And to see that kind of teamwork unfold is really cool.
Now that we've had the event earlier in this week and you had people outside of Zipper playing the mode for the very first time, what was some of the feedback that you heard at the event in general, both positive and in regards to things that they thought that that may or may not need improvement? Hopefully they didn't think anything, but it'd be good to know what some of the general feedback was and what they were telling you guys as designers.
Sure. Well, you know, overall, they really enjoyed it. I heard a lot of cheering and stuff when people would, you know, there was this one time near the end of the tournament, and I think this was the IGN team, the team that ultimately won. They were, everyone was incapacitated except for one guy, and he was sort of pinned down, you know, and it was one of those like scary moments where he was like, oh, if I get killed, you know, we're going to fail, but we're so close to winning. And he had to come up with the best strategy for healing the next guy. And but once he had managed to do that, crawling over, healing his friend under gunfire from snipers, they both got up, brought everyone back, and ultimately won that encounter. And there was cheering throughout the facility for that. That was great. But yeah, a lot of the feedback we got was that we really hit the target that we were shooting for in terms of having the players come up with great squad tactics and really make sure each player has a role within the squad and that they're watching each other's back and helping out. And, you know, if someone runs out and tries to run and gun it, they're probably not going to do very well, at least not on the higher difficulties. And so, I mean, people learn that lesson really fast.
one of the questions that we have gotten recently from fans, both on the PlayStation blog and the SOCOM.com forums, is we're online only. Why focus on online only and why not do something like local co-op? Why the decision to do it online only?
Some of it is actually just technical limitations that we have. When you're trying to put even four players on the same screen, you have to deal with frame rate. You know, now you're generating a screen not just for one player and all the enemy AI and effects and tracers and that sort of thing, but now you're also doing it for four screens or five screens. And, you know, when we wanted five-player co-op, like, how do you divvy up the TV screen for five players? That's, you know, not so easy to equally distribute out the screen space for that.
Yeah, and even on a 60-inch television, it's still not a lot of space to watch the game. I think that the experiences isn't there, especially this generation, right? You look at games this generation, you really want to play something that takes you in, and it's a lot less forgivable to have a screen that's only yay big in front of you, and you have to make those sacrifices.
And honestly, I think those sacrifices in general just dumb down the game. I've worked on games in the past where we've done split screen co-op or, you know, four play. And I think it was actually just split screen. But, you know, you're taking a hit on the frame rate as well. And your characters aren't as sharp because you can't have that many high-res textures on it. You can't do this many particle effects on it. It just kind of like dumbs down the experience on it. And, you know, something that even when I go back and play some of the old four-player split-screen games out there, GoldenEye being the perfect example, I remember like, oh, wow, like it's a completely different experience, and you kind of forget how much is missing and how much things have to be down-res for that. And that's something that, you know, we had a very high quality bar with our art that we definitely wanted to hit with the environments and the lighting and the effects, and we kind of didn't even want to dumb that down so much for the co-op. But yeah, the technical limitations there are pretty daunting to try. It's not as easy as like, oh, we'll just put everybody on the same screen. It's, yeah, not that easy. But we did have serious discussions with it. This is not something that we simply said, oh yeah, no, we're not doing split screen. You know, there were definitely Travis Steiner, the lead designer, definitely brought it up as when we started doing co-op about serious investigations and engineering and design and art, did serious investigations into that before we came up. So this isn't just something that we just said, oh yeah, no, we're not supporting at all. We definitely looked into how our engine is set up, the technical ramifications on it before we made that decision.
So while we're talking to you, Christian, Blaine is the lead designer for the cooperative multiplayer stuff. But so people understand what it is exactly that you specifically designed within the SOCOM realm. Can you let everyone know exactly what it is that you've been working on?
Yeah, I'm lead level designer on SOCOM 4, so worked on obviously leading the level design design team, giving them feedback, helping Travis and Ed Byrne with the story, and fleshing out where the environments are going to take place, working with the art directors and the environment leads on, you know, the general look of SOCOM, helping, you know, working with Blaine and Joe Maris on AI and with the encounters and what type of encounters we're going to have on that. So I've done the single player side of it, and I've also, before we handed it off to Kevin Schmidt on the multiplayer, I also did, was like multiplayer lead level designer there for a little while too, and helped get the ball rolling for the multiplayer levels.
So we've talked a lot about co-op so far, but as we mentioned, this week we also showed off Covert, some of the Covert missions. Can you guys go into a little bit about what people can expect to see on that in the game?
Kind of like what you had said earlier, it's 45. There are no teammates by herself.
Yeah, yeah, they're true solo missions.
Yeah, true solo missions. She has been sent kind of deep behind enemy lines, and far as story goes, by the ops commander, to either gather reconnaissance, so the team knows what to plan for the next mission, or like the first covert mission that players will play in the campaign, White Tiger, she's actually sent to disable a dry dock to prevent this ship, this guided missile frigate, from leaving dry dock. So the ops commander can then formulate a plan on how they're actually going to take out this ship. So they all take place at night. It is definitely heavily based on using stealth and a
lot of
reconnaissance.
You get a little stealth meter on the side of the screen so you can tell how kind of hidden and all that you are.
Yeah, and it'll tell you like when you're in shadows or when you're in soft cover, which is, you know, grass and vegetation and foliage and that sort of stuff, when you're actually hidden. It will also warn you when enemies, not necessarily when they see you, but when they're getting close to you. So even if you can't see them, you know that there might be an enemy right on the other side. Because you're by yourself, it is definitely something that you don't want to necessarily run and gun. The enemies will all focus solely on you, so you definitely want to maintain that stealth, maintain quiet, take out enemies using stealth kills. We do give you your two weapons that you come in, is a submachine gun with a suppressor on it, and then a sniper rifle with a low variable scope and a suppressor on it. So you do have that freedom of taking out enemies. You want to make sure that you're a pretty good shot if you decide to engage them, since if you miss or miss a lot, they will eventually turn around. They will search for you. They will call out to their to the group around them, and they will all begin to search towards you.
And you can move bodies after you take somebody out and get them out of the way.
Yeah, there's that whole tactical element added to just the single player. In addition to moving bodies, you also have the ability to throw coins to try to get their attention.
Little bullet casings, which is probably the most fun thing, is when we were looking at
there's
these
some pretty messed
missions.
Up videos that get sent around internally of bodies being
I think I started that trend on it having a little fun of using bullet casings to pull guys over into corners and then taking them out with a stealth kill and then
to the groin.
To the groin. It's as a guy, you get some guy pain in there when you see that. It's pretty brutal. And then lining up the bodies. But the bullet casing is probably 45's best tactic to use in these covert missions. You can use it to manipulate the guys. You throw a bullet casing. You'll see a little glint where it lands. The enemy AI will get distracted by it and, you know, kind of go to investigate. You know, you'll usually hear like, what's that sound or what was that? And then they'll go over and investigate that. And that kind of gives you a clear path through that area. You know, for the first stealth or covert mission in White Tiger, you know, we definitely have that where it's usually just one guy you need to do that just to kind of distract. And as we go through the campaign and as you go through the other three stealth covert missions, it's a little bit trickier and you have to kind of use your all your skills in your repertoire, especially the last one, which is actually kind of fun, where enemies are just all scattered around and you know you have to get into that building. But now it's not just one guy guarding the main entrance. It's like three or four. And which ones you distract and which ones you take out silently and try to move their bodies.
What I
around.
Think is really cool is White Tiger, the first one specifically, you can pretty easily go through and kill people as you're going along, and it's very rewarding and nice to, you know, sneak up on somebody to do that. But as you get further on in the campaign, you can still totally do that, but the focus of what you need to be doing is going in and remaining stealthy, not interacting with anybody. And in some cases, if you do that, you are, I mean, while you technically can, you are very much putting yourself at risk, and it kind of becomes of, you know, do you want to do those? You want to let a guy kind of go and be a risk later on, then he might see you later. But, you know, you're at that time playing maybe that one section a little bit smarter than you could otherwise. And I think it kind of – it definitely is a big change up from the other action-oriented missions where you've got your whole squad going on. But even amongst themselves, they kind of play out differently depending on you know, the enemy density and those sorts of things, which I think is a really cool variable in the game.
And that's something that we were definitely cognizant of when we first started these covert missions. And we wanted to make sure that it wasn't an opportunity where the player, a player that doesn't like a stealth type mission, you know, they are the run and gun type player and they can't stand that stealth mission. We were very cognizant in making sure that that wasn't an opportunity where the player can set the controller down and that they're like, okay, I'm done. I don't like stealth missions, but I have to play a stealth mission. So we wanted to make sure that there was still that opportunity for the player. There were still those tactics. Now, for the most part, you have to be prepared for those, and you know, you kind of don't want to go the run and gun route, but at least you have that opportunity to do that. And you know, we have weapon scatter; you can always pick up someone else's weapon. You don't have to use the suppressed weapons that you can come in with. But
now, one thing I think that we should let everyone know is that even though these are covert oriented missions, that any mission that you play, regardless if you're playing as the entire squad led by OpsCom or 45, you can decide in all those maps to approach them in different ways. And if you want to be stealthier in some areas and in some of the OpsCom levels, you have that opportunity as well. I think the second level is a really good example of that. In the beginning, when you first show up, Rendezvous, you talked about it earlier.
Yeah, it's something as we come in, you know, SOCOM has always been a tactical game and using your team. And we kind of wanted to make sure that we continued with that tradition with the SOCOM 4 level. So even when we first started doing the level design, that was one of the big things that we always wanted to make sure. Do we have stealth routes around encounters where you can kind of set up your team or set up, you know, yourself or plan out your tactics, how best you want to attack this engagement? Do you, you know, where do you position your teammates? Where do you position yourself? What weapons, you know, do you maybe want to pick up or bring with you?
Example of this is we showed, we had the community day and the media day at the end of January. We showed Onslaught. And after the first encounter in that mission, you come up across a crest of a hill, and there's some guys down below who had just taken out some friendly forces. And the way that demo played out when we did the demo for it, and is individual enemies were targeted. Each of the two squads were sent off in their own separate part. And there's a lot of preparation work going into how that mission was approached. And I think everybody that was there that saw that demo played out said, hey, you can come into these and you can spend, you know, 5 minutes setting up how you want to take out this encounter, and then you hit the go button, and then, you know, all hell breaks free. And if you do it well enough, you can get through an encounter pretty quickly, you know, if you've got everything lined up really well. And I think that's kind of the strong point of the game, is you can, you know, go slow and take a tactical approach, or you can just rush in and let them start firing at you, then, you know, go find cover and
play as it
goes. But
that's not necessarily a good idea.
Yeah. No, you can't run out in the middle of the open, but if you don't want to slow the game down, you can go in and just, you know, throw a grenade and draw their attention, and you can play it both ways, and they both work well.
Yeah, and rather than force players to have to play always tactically or force players to always play at run and gun, you know, that it's a lot of that. And I think we said it a lot here, even especially with the co-op, is it is all based off of player choice and how do you want to play it. You know, some encounters, you know, we've seen through our focus group testing and even internally, which players here are just want to run and gun it, and they have a great time doing it. And which of those want to plan it out tactically, like you said, with Onslaught or with Rendezvous, and just be very meticulous where they position the guys and make sure that their teammates have all the targets and everything like that before they hit that go command and all hell breaks loose. So I think, you know, we always approach the level design for the single player component like that, and it kind of transitioned I think even more so with the over to co-op. And I think one of the reasons why co-op is always is so much fun is because we initially designed a lot of these levels with multiple tactics in mind that then seamlessly kind of transferred over to the co-op experience as well.
Yeah, of course, in co-op, there's always the opportunity for someone to have like a Leroy Jenkins kind of moment, you know, where they can run up and kind of blow it for the team. But when the team works together, it's completely magical. It's really awesome, especially calling out the, you know, one guy sees the sniper up in the jungle and no one else sees him, and but I don't have a beat on him or whatever. I mark him for my teammate and then they take him down. It's a really satisfying experience. And with the enemy randomization and everything, I just have to tell this story. One time we were playing co-op, me and a few of the guys here, and we cleaned out this encounter. We beat it, and it was difficult, and we were really proud of ourselves. So we were running around, jumping around, having fun, doing dumb things. I told one of my buddies, hey, go stand by this barrel. I want to shoot it up and explode and see what happens, right? So we're just messing around. He runs over to the barrel. I start shooting it. Anyway, a bunch of snipers show up in the mountains that we didn't realize were going to be there, and they just took us all out because we were just messing around.
It was like a boxing match. Keep yourself protected at all times.
Yeah, and the Leroy Jenkins moments, your teammates will not appreciate that. A lot of usually swear words are usually said when you see that one guy just start running off like, dude, what are you doing? And we haven't purposely healed that person. We just let him like, no, leave you know what? You're done. You're not playing.
Over.
You're going to watch us play for the rest of them. And we're not going to go there and heal you anymore.
And usually that person's out in the open anyway. So healing that person might not be the most tactically sound decision.
That's some good information on both the covert and the co-op mode. Before we wrap up the show this week, though, Chris, you gave everyone an update on the forums last week on some additional community enabled features that we've added to the game. Mm-hmm. Can you give everyone an update on it, specifically as it relates to e-tags?
Yeah, that's right. So after the community and media days, there was a lot of people came out and they said, when Kevin Schmidt was on the show last time, we talked about how e-tags were in the classic mode where it basically came down to like a two-minute warning where at the end people would show up on the radar and their names would show up if you know they were in a certain range and kind of try to draw everybody to actually fight out the end of the map. And we heard a lot of feedback about that that's not the way that players wanted to go. At least in the classic mode, they wanted to be able to hide and draw matches out, use that tactically, and have to actually go find guys and you know, kind of that older feel of you don't know where anybody is. And so we've gone back to that. We've removed the e-tags from the game. We removed, or at least from classic mode, removed the use of radar for enemies. So your guys will still show up, but the enemy doesn't show up on the radar anymore. And so now it is that very pure, you know, you have no idea where the enemy is anymore. And we addressed that one. And as an added bonus, we also removed the white grenade trail. That's also been removed from the game.
And that was proven to be successful in a multiplayer match that CJ and I were both in, and mm-hmm. we're the last two guys in the map. I went to go hide, and Claymore put a Claymore in the doorway and watched the other doorway. And CJ and I think were both in separate rooms waiting, and who was going to budge first and come out to find the other person first. And
who kind did? Of played
the, it was CJ.
I figured, man.
He actually was he figured out kind of maybe that's where I was, so he threw a grenade in the room, which took out my Claymore, but he didn't expect me to be prone in the corner of the room, so and that was actually on abandoned too. And
nice.
Yeah, I can hear him yell from his office down the hallway at me. So it was kind of satisfying.
Those sort of moments are like really tense at the end of those multiplayer matches, and I usually lose in those moments because I don't have as quick a reaction time as other people here. But I always found them really fun. And there was this one time when we were having the community day here where I was playing and I was the last one alive on my team. So a bunch of the community guys are watching me and I was like, oh man, it's all on me, you know, for the team. Of course, I ended up losing because I came across a chicken and I thought it'd be really cool if I shot this chicken, right? So I did. Chicken exploded and it alerted the other guy and he took me out.
Nice. That's it for this show.
Yep.
Our next show is going to be on March 11th is when everyone will hear it, and it'll be much closer to our appearance at PAX East. I'm going to that along with Travis and Kevin.
The game will be there all
and
3 days.
Yes, the game will be there, playable all 3 days. I know there were some questions about that last time. Are you only going to be there on Friday and Sunday? But we're going to be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all day long, all 3 days. So make sure you drop by, say hi, play the game, let us know what you think. It will be multiplayer, and we have about 16 kiosks set up. So there's going to be a good amount of of opportunity for you to go in there and check it out. And we might even have some goodies to give away. I'm just saying, might, rhetorically, we are. We're going to give stuff away.
So as always, you can follow us on all of your favorite social networks. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/zipper. And on Facebook, you can search for Zipper Interactive or SOCOM to find us on there.
Of course, if you have any questions or comments, you can always email us at zipline@zipperint.com or head on over to the official threads that we set up for this podcast every now and then. We didn't do one this time, but that's because it's been so crazy and we knew that we had so much information that we didn't want to waste anybody's time. But when those are up, you can find them at forums.socom.com and forums.mag.com.
Yep. And we will have even more new stuff to talk about on the next show. So
yes. We're actually going to have a couple of things that we're going to talk about in general next week.
Yep.
Not just the beta times.
That's right.
We have a few other things. And that's right. I said a few other, not just one other thing that we're talking about.
That'd make a good sitcom. Beta times.
Beta times.
See it now.
Yeah, there you go. Blaine and Christian, thank you guys for coming on the show this week.
Thanks for having
you guys on there. And as Jeremy said, we will see you guys in 2 weeks.